Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Welcome back. Now, as you might have heard there during the ad break, Off the Ball heading off for some winter sun and top-class golf. We want you to join us, the Off the Ball team, along with some special guests, including Kevin Kilbane, Kieran Donaghy, Peter Lawrie and more, are taking on two of the best courses on the planet, the Yas Links and the National. It's the first ever Off the Ball Open this November. We're looking at 5 nights in a 4-star hotel, a Peter Lawrie golf clinic, gala dinner and an OTV roadshow, November 17th to 23rd in Abu Dhabi. If that sounds like your kind of thing, then sign up now. You'll get all the information you need at offtheball.com/open. And speaking of opens, the 119th US Open this year at Pebble Beach is upon us, the third major of the year. Delighted to say a man who has 3 majors of his own is on the line. He's also the European Ryder Cup captain, Padraig Harrington. Good evening.
Well, I'm not delighted that you're delighted. I'd rather be there and not talking to you.
I'm not taking that personally. That's understandable.
Yeah, it is. It's tough, actually, when you do miss out on these majors, but I'll still watch it for the next 4 days and be fascinated and enthralled by it. And hopefully we'll get a good winner come Sunday.
I want to put a quote to you from Brooks Koepka. He was saying this pre-USPGA at Bethpage. He said, "These things actually are easier to win than most events. There's 156 players in the field, so you figure at least 80 of them I'm probably just going to beat. You figure about half of them won't play well, so you're down to about maybe 35. And then from 35 on, pressure's going to get to some of them. It really only leaves you with a few more to beat. One of the big things I've learned about these major championships is you don't need to win them. Just hang around. If you hang around, good things are going to happen." Is that something you agree with? And if so, when did you come to that realisation?
Fully agree with it. It's interesting, though. You only feel like that when things are going well for you and your game is in good shape. And that's obviously the mindset of a guy who's winning at the moment. You can be patient. You can sit there. You can wait for good things to happen. But if you weren't winning, look, you'd be pushing, you'd be forcing, you'd be losing patience, you'd be worried about other people in the field. And we've seen that over the years. You know, you go back to Rory, say 2011, when he had a distinct advantage over the field in driving. You know, he was turning up and he wasn't worried about the other guys. He was playing his own game and being patient. That advantage, obviously, is not that he's lost it, but other people have caught up over the years. You know, there's plenty of guys who drive it as well, nearly as well as Rory. So, you know, he's now looking over his shoulder. Brooks is winning majors for the last six, I think it is, or four in the last 2 years, and he can sit back and let it come to him, and they are coming to him.
Yeah, 4 in the last 8. So only Ben Hogan, Tiger Woods and Jack Nicklaus, the end, have managed to win 4 in 8 majors, which is quite extraordinary. It's interesting you use the word patience as well. He was saying a couple of weeks ago when he was doing a press conference at a regular tour event that he often just runs out of patience on a Friday at a regular PGA Tour stop if he's not winning. Whereas at a major, he has a deeper respect for the tournament, and no matter what happens, he stays calm, he stays in the moment. Again, these are very experienced kind of words of wisdom coming from him. This is kind of what you expect a guy maybe in his mid-30s to have realised about these championships.
Well, it is the actual common theme of it. If you find a guy in his 20s, he'll say that. What's experienced is he's believing it, and he's living it. I think every psychology book written on golf will say that's the case, that there's less guys can win, you've got to be patient. I often describe playing a regular event compared to playing a major. It's the difference between a 100-metre sprint and a marathon. Like in a regular event, if you're not 4 under par after 9 holes, you start panicking. The field has gone by you. You know that in a regular event, you're going to have to get to 18, 19 on the par. You know, if a guy shoots 8 under the first day, you're not thinking he's going to come back to you. You're thinking he's going to go forward. He's going to shoot 4 under, 4 under, 4 under. All of a sudden, you've got to get to 20 or level par after 9 holes. How are you going to do that? In a major, a guy gets a lead, and bar it being Tiger Woods in his heyday, bar it being Rory 2011, you're just sitting there going, oh, hard luck him, he's got all the pressure, he's going to come back to the field. You're never worried about a guy getting away from you in a major. You know you have time. You know that level par is always good. And I know the general set of the US Open level par, but the thinking this year is that the USGA have going to see sense that to try and hold the players to level par causes controversy. It causes them to have to genuinely trip the course up so that good shots are punished. Whereas if they look to a score, you know, 4 under to 8 under, they can have a great test of golf that there's no trickery in it, that is seriously difficult, but they have to focus on that score because there's too many good players. So to hold the whole field to level par, there's somebody who's going to hit nearly all the fairways, all the greens. So, you know, they have to accept that the standard, the depth has got better.
Yeah.
The quality of the players have got better. So just let us go to 4-8 under par and you're going to get a great championship. And that seems to be the feeling that the USGA are going to, you know, get away from that level par, which is killing their tournaments, trying to force us to shoot level par.
It's funny, Adam Scott was talking, and he's a fairly mild-mannered man. I'm sure you've played plenty of rounds of golf with Adam Scott. And he was saying that Pinehurst, back in 2014, was actually the last good US Open. The last tournament he felt was well-run. Because between Erin Hills, Chambers Bay, the Dustin Johnson rules confusion at Oakmont, last year several greens got away from them. I would think the USGA have been suitably chastised and do not want to risk being the story again. They will want to stay a million miles away from that. So should that open it up a bit? Like Paul McGinley was on last night and he was saying that can actually suit, that could suit a Rory McIlroy or it could suit a Brooks Koepka if those greens are that bit more receptive.
I don't know about being receptive, but I definitely think it suits them the fairer the challenge is. So to get us to level par, there's trickery involved. And that has to suit the most patient guy, the guy with the best tolerance for bad breaks. And maybe it suits the guy who gets lucky.
Yeah.
The best players don't want that. They want the real stern, fair test. So I don't think the best guys want the green soft. They certainly settle for them fair, but they just don't want really pin positions that are on a slope that you could three putt from 2 feet. They want just good solid golf, and Rory doesn't want a tricky golf course. There's no way Rory. He wants a stern test, but no. He wants to take the luck out of it because Rory knows Rory knows he's got the ability to beat everybody without thinking he's got to get lucky. And with the way Brooks is talking, that's exactly what he's saying. He can win these things without getting fortunate. So that was one of the big changes when I was winning them. I went from a state of mind that I thought, you know, if I have a big week and get lucky, hole a few putts, I could win it. I went to a state of mind, actually, you know what, if I do my thing and play my game, it's going to be right there at the end of the week and the other guys are going to have to beat me. And that's a beautiful state of mind to be in the majors where you don't feel on edge. And as I said, Rory definitely was there in 2011. The great quote of Tiger Woods, "I can win with my B game." If you think you can win with your B game, your A game nearly always turns up.
Yeah.
When you think you need your A game, it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And that's Brooks seems to be in that category. That he's not turning up thinking, "I've got to play my best golf." He's thinking, which he would in a regular event, he's actually turning up to the majors thinking, you know what, if I play okay here, I'm going to have a chance on Sunday to come down those last 9 holes.
Yeah, it's such a brilliant state of mind to be in. Talk to us a bit about Pebble Beach, if you don't mind. You know, Nicholas in 72, Watson in 82, Tiger Woods famously in 2000, Graham McDowell in 2010, Tom Kite in 92. It's a pretty impressive winners list.
It's produced some real iconic winners. It is a great golf course. So it has a couple of really, well, more than a couple, but a number of spectacular golf holes. It has a number of challenging, tough holes. There's a few holes that, you know, people wouldn't even remember. But I think the beauty of it is it really does have a stern finish. So you just don't get away. You have the middle, obviously, to start, so you've got to make some birdies. You've got the middle where you've got to hang on. Then you have a few more birdie chances. But then at the end, you can make a couple of birdies, but there's a good, solid finish where there's plenty happening. So a leader can come back to the field, but also somebody chasing can make a couple of birdies coming home. So it really is a great championship course. You know, the way it ebbs and flows all the way to the round, because there are definitely birdie chances on the golf course. It's not like it's not a brute of a course by any means. But you certainly, there's also, you know, even it's just like the first hole is like 3-iron wedge, probably 4-iron wedge, you know, but you hit your wedge shot in the wrong place and you struggle to get it on the green with your chip shot. So it has its bite, but it definitely gives up a bit as well.
Koepka was saying he might only use his driver 4 or 5 times around.
Yeah, it is firm and fast. That's the word. They've actually slowed it down Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday compared to what it was at the weekend. But you can be assured by the time it comes Sunday, it's going to be very firm and fast. So that would tend to suit the shorter hitters, you know, the straighter hitters. You can keep it in play. So I know the rough is heavy, which is generally, you know, the longer you hit it when the rough is heavy, the better. But I think with a firm course, I think you're probably looking at that everybody is in play. It doesn't necessarily say, okay, you've got to be a bomber, and it doesn't necessarily say that the being short and straight is out of it. Everybody can play this course.
Mm. Do you remember much of Woods' performance there in 2000 when he was 15 shots clear of the field?
I was in second place with 9 holes to go, so yeah, I remember quite a bit.
Yeah, because Ernie Els had the famous quip off 18, well, I won the tournament I was involved in, is kind of what he said when he came up. Like, did you ever go back and watch Woods' play, given that you were out in the course at the same time?
Yeah, yes and no. I obviously, you get shown it a lot, but did I sit down and watch it? No. I find, like, if you look back at the PGA and Whistling Straits, where Jason Day lapped the field and he played with Jordan Spieth in the last round and particularly outplayed Jordan. He hit it 50, 60, 70 yards past him on a lot of holes and looked unbeatable. And Jordan hasn't played the same since then because he had to... Well, the rest of the field got lapped by Jason Day. We didn't actually physically stand there and see it happening to us. And that can be very off-putting. So I'm happy I didn't play with Tiger and get him, and see the gap. And you don't physically see it. That's not a bad thing for a player because, you know, if you get lapped by 15 shots and you're actually there, present, seeing it happening, and you just go, well, I could never do that. Mm. And clearly we couldn't do it, but at least I wasn't confronted with it as much as, say, Jordan Spieth and Jason Day in Whistling Straits.
Yeah, a bit of self-preservation going on. Because Woods was talking yesterday at his press conference. He was saying, interestingly, he was saying he was feeling very under the weather, just physically. He might have been sick at Bethpage and his back wasn't in great shape, but he's feeling good this week. And somebody asked him, in terms of strategy, how are you going to play the course 2019 as opposed to the year 2000 when you were a very different person physically? And he said, interestingly, I'm going to be able to play this pretty much in the same way because the advances in golf equipment and the golf ball have offset what I've lost in age. So in terms of the spots I'm going to end up in, it's going to be very similar. That's an ominous enough warning. I mean, it'd be impossible to replicate what he did in 2000, but he's got a big chance this week, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. Look, absolutely. He is not the driver of the ball he was back in 2000. He was very powerful, very long, and very straight back then. He was a great driver of the ball. But he doesn't have to use that driver this week. So every other part of his game, you know, he's right up there leading greens in regulation. His putting is back, his chipping is back, and his head seems to be in the game. So, I know he's third or fourth or fifth favourite, but I think Tiger gets stronger the more he stays in this event. So, you know, I really saw that at the Masters, that when he genuinely had a chance of winning, he reverted back to, I just want to get the job done. Whereas I think sometimes Tiger in this era is concerned about how he's swinging the club and concerned about hitting the right shots, which he definitely wasn't the last couple of holes at the Masters. So the longer Tiger stays in the hunt, the more the old Tiger comes out, the more he gets things done. And Tiger was, like we all know, he was famous for doing spectacular things when they were needed.
Yeah. Because you've talked very interestingly before about how when you approached a big tournament, you would try and leave technical thoughts behind, you know, get over to that right side of the brain, as it were. Woods, very concerned with his swing at times and can get quite technical. So you're sort of saying when he now gets back in the hunt, that almost flicks a switch where, you know, I can worry about how my swing's looking another day. I just need to get this done. And almost as a result, he plays his best golf or his best stuff.
Oh, look, we all play our best stuff when it's on the line and you're not caring how you're doing it. You're just caring about getting the results. So, you know, when I saw the Masters, like, he tried to hit a draw off the 8 for Lent. He tried to hit a draw off 11 for Lent. And then he tried to draw around the corner on 13. And he failed miserably on all three drives. He blocked two, hit a big hook and another. And then 14 required a draw. He forgot about it. He just hit his fade. 15 required a draw for Lent. No, he just hit his fade. And you could just see he wasn't caring about hitting the right shot. He was caring about, how am I going to play this hole in the lowest amount of shots? And it is a different mindset. You tend to... You know, you can. It's easier to get into it under pressure. It's easier to get into it down the last couple of holes. As I said, Tiger will go out the first round, and he'd be trying to feel where his swing is at, and he'd be thinking about his golf swing. And if it goes smoothly for a couple of rounds and he stays in there, he'll go back to the old Tiger. You know what? I don't need to worry about this, and just play.
Yeah.
And when he plays, he's special, and he still has that ability to hit the special shots. His iron play has been fantastic. It's amazing to see his best leading greens and regulation for most of the year. He has lost a lot of speed. Like, we're watching the PGA, and he's, you know, Tiger, when he came out for getting the 190s ball speed, he's down in the 60s now, which, if everything was matched up efficiently, that's 60 yards of distance.
Right.
So, he might save the new ball, and the ball does go further, even when... Not as far as Tiger had a big advantage. He had nearly two steps in advantage off the tee back in the day. Now he's actually giving up off the tee, but he's capable of making up elsewhere.
Okay, interesting. What about with your Ryder Cup captaincy hat on? I don't know how Whistling Straits compares with Pebble. I don't know what you're looking out for. Is it how people handle pressure? How will that inform how you watch a tournament like this? Or does it at all? Is it just too early and removed from Whistling Straits?
It's not a similar test, but what I'm kind of looking for is there's a lot of good players in Europe who are performing in Europe and performing consistently and winning in Europe. But they now need to step up and start performing in world events and majors.
Mm.
So I'm looking for the younger guys, the guys who are putting their name in the hat for the Ryder Cup to say, okay, yeah, now let's move to the international, the full stage with the players they're going to be playing against in the and start showing some form. So there is an element of I'm not really concerned about the big stars, but I'm more concerned about the fringe players to start, you know, knocking in their top tens in world and majors and things like that. So, you know, I know it's a bit off now, but they need to start showing that they can handle the big stage now.
And how much of a given week is Ryder Cup captaincy taking up of your thinking time or your actual time?
It's starting to get busy. Yeah, I had like 4 hours of a meeting today.
Right.
And starting to lock in, which is interesting. I'm starting to lock in. Yeah, I've got like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Scottish Open, three meetings, that sort of stuff. I've got stuff going on at the Irish Open. Yeah, it's starting to pile up. It might be a little bit busy at the moment because it's at this stage it's actually, believe it or not, picking the clothing designs today, and you know that I have to pick the rainwear, I have to pick the hats,
right.
I have to try the hats and see do they fit and what styles they are, and I've got to remember that I'm dealing with 30-year-olds who think they're 20.
Yeah.
So I have to be trendy.
Oh dear. What are we looking at? At least 2 to 3 green numbers, I presume.
You'll probably find that there might be a Green Bay Packers green in there, all right.
Okay, good.
Not necessarily, not an emerald green. We weren't looking at that. But, there'll obviously be your standard European colours, no doubt about that. And then we'll see if we can, we try and figure out if we can avoid certain colours might look good individually. But when you put 16 guys together,
yes,
I think some of the colours from the, at times, people go, oh, that's a bit too much yellow.
And how much are you allowing your analytical mind to run away here? Because there are football managers who have done studies on what colour socks tend to perform best. You know, it turns out it's white, actually. White socks tend to be the best. Are you getting into all this kind of stuff and what the psychology of different colours is?
Wow, I would know things that red tends to be the colour of winners. But this is more to do with perception from referees. Black, they give more rulings against people who wear black and things like that. I'd have read all those general psychology books that come up with these things, but no, I will hope my team looks smart and comfortable, and I'll let their golf do the work. I'm not thinking the colours determine.
Yeah. Not that we've dragged you on here to be some kind of tipster. Are there kind of names beyond the obvious, the kind of usual top 5 or 10 in the kind of betting or who people think will do well, that you're looking at and think Pebble Beach really suits them? Or are you good at predicting these things?
I am the worst tipster ever.
Okay.
If it comes to golf and and horse racing. I am the Jonah of all time. Even if I can get, I can source some of the best information ever when it comes to horse racing, and I still can't back a winner. So I must, just horse racing and golf stay away from me. Whoever I pick, my wife or family will generally run a mile away from it.
Okay, the Harrington kiss of death it is then.
Yeah, not that we're allowed to gamble anymore or give advice. No. We're not allowed, yeah. Public, yes. Private, no.
Right, okay. What did you see much of Rory in Canada?
Yeah, a little bit. Saw him around the place, players' lounge, things like that, and we were chatting away. He seems very comfortable with his game, very relaxed. They certainly looked at him on the course, but off the course, he seems in a good frame of mind. The tough thing for him is, he just has to have the Brooks Koepka attitude, which isn't easy. If the winds are coming quickly, it's easy to have that.
Yeah.
When they're not there, you're kind of, do I need to do something different? Do I need to add something? Do I need to, be on top form? And Brooks is going in there. It's fantastic to see, but it doesn't last forever.
Yeah.
He's just going in there thinking, yeah, just an all right week and I'll have another major.
It's interesting. Brooks Koepka still has a kind of chip on his shoulder generally, because he was talking yesterday in his press conference and it had come to his attention that the Fox TV promo for the US Open didn't include any shots of him whatsoever. And he said somebody needs to, or should get fired over it. So he is still, it's amazing that somebody with four majors is playing with a sense of almost chip on the shoulder, but he's still out to prove a lot of people.
He couldn't have paid for motivation,
more
motivation. Like it's phenomenal. That it's beyond bizarre. And his comments, I saw the quote, was actually pretty reasonable. He didn't outly say, fire everybody, but it's shockingly amazing when you think that promo. Okay, they probably sent a couple of interns to make the promo, and the interns looked on Twitter and said, "Well, if these people are the most popular, this is who we put in the thing." But that promo would have been reviewed before it went out.
Mm.
So the people who reviewed it, it's hard to believe.
It
that
is.
This is possibly it's just beyond belief. Now the thing with Brooks is he's no corporate sponsors. He's not interested in corporate sponsors. He doesn't want to do the work off the golf course.
So he
doesn't have big companies marketing him. And if you turn on the golf in the States, you'll often see two or three of the five ads will have Ricky Fowler in it between breaks.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have that. He's not interested. So he's not a prolific social media guy, he's not out there putting himself out there. He's pretty quiet in that sense. So you could see how that downplays his image. And when he had a chip on his shoulder a year ago, you could kind of go, well, you don't really play into this. You're not really playing the game.
Yeah.
But when you're a four-time major winner in the last eight and two of them are US Opens and you're defending, it's like, you think that qualifies you to be in the promo video. So his chip on the shoulder is well justified.
Mm. Yeah, I would have thought so.
And yes, head should roll for that.
Ricky Elliott was on a couple of weeks ago, his caddy, and he was saying that one of the reasons he hasn't gone with the club manufacturer is he wants to use the best equipment in each department. He figures it ain't worth tying yourself to one manufacturer, which was quite admirable. Can I ask, can you explain why?
That is incredibly admirable if, yeah, there's a price, okay?
Give us a figure. What kind of price?
Well, again, he's got a big Nike sponsorship.
Yeah.
But that kind of curtails the big club manufacturer sponsorship. So, but there is figures out there. Like, the guys are getting $10 million a year for equipment and $10 million for clothes or $5 million. There's big figures out there. So, if somebody steps up and says, Brooks is no fool. There's just not been a figure that has enticed him to go, I still like my freedom.
Yeah.
As I said, it's spoken of a man who everybody has a price, and someday he'll have to turn around and change his opinion on that.
Did you ever play with equipment where you thought to yourself, deep down, I know this isn't the best iron or driver or ball I could be using? No.
No. Absolutely. And I've used Wilson for 22 years, which wouldn't be one of the, wouldn't be marketed like some of the other products. But Wilson have won the most majors of any brand over the years. they'd make exceptional irons. When I won the majors, I was using a driver as it happened. And it's the great thing for me, and this is the alternative to Brooks, I've always had a very liberal contract that if I don't want to use some of the clubs, I can use other clubs. So it's okay. There's one or two manufacturers that insist you use all 14.
Yeah.
Whereas with Wilson, I've always had it written in my contract. If I want to use something else because I think it's better, I can use it, and it's up to Wilson to get me something better than it.
Right.
So I've had a nice contract that way, but I've always chosen. Like at the moment, I actually have a pretty loose Wilson contract, and the number of Wilson clubs have gone up in my bag rather than down. They'll do anything, and they make a very, Wilson make a great iron. It's just one of those things that perception. They don't have the marketing budget of some of these other companies to tell you that they make a great iron.
Mm, yeah. And, you know, footballers famously wearing a certain type of boot and actually putting the shoe polish over the three stripes or something because they're not sponsored. Are there players out there who probably are playing one club but actually it's dressed up as another?
No. Right. None of that happens. But there was a big change this year. TaylorMade would have basically last year and previous years would have sponsored anybody to use their driver and would have had the driver count. And they've kind of realised since then that, you know what, we only need to have the big guys.
Yeah.
And we don't need to have 70 guys out there. So it's quite interesting. There's players who have used to play them and now have taken the huff and will play something else even though they like the driver they were playing.
Mm.
So players can but there's good choice out there. So there's a number of manufacturers that are, at the moment, that have produced a good, you know, I can think of four manufacturers at the moment that, you know, actually five now, because Shane Lowry was struggling a bit with a driver fiddling around, and he's got a lovely Strixon driver that he's very happy with at the moment. And that's a perfect example. Shane can use whatever driver he wants. So if there's another manufacturer comes up with a good driver, he can go. He won at the start of the year with Callaway, but didn't particularly get on so well with it. And then he struggled a bit, and now he's got his own manufacturer produced a driver that really suits him. And his uptick in his form has come from he's happy with his driver.
Right.
You know, whereas for the first 3 months of the year, he used 15 drivers. Now he's very comfortable with that Strixon driver, and that's put him in a nice place.
God, that's amazing. Well, because we've been rambling on here, and that was going to be my last question. I was going to ask if you knew why there was such an upturn in Larry's form, second at the weekend, up to 32nd in the world. So you've answered that. And he likes a US Open as well.
Yeah, Shane is a good straight driver of the ball. He gets very... as I said, he is now again. He was struggling early in the year. You know, and that sets him up. He's strong, pretty strong everywhere else, but he really relies on his driving to build him up for the rest of the rounds. And every performance he has, he's on a tighter golf course. He doesn't drive as well on the big open golf courses where it's about booming it out there. He hits it long, but he doesn't play well on the ones where you have to boom. He plays much better on the tighter golf courses where he can play within himself with the driver and then hit a lot of fairways. He's decently long. He's one of the, you know, relative to the field, he'd be well up there in driver distance. So put him on a tight golf course, he does very nicely. So a US Open course off the tee is exactly where Shane revels.
Yeah.
So if you see some good driving, you'll probably find he'll have a good week.
Okay. Geez, it's brilliant insight. You did your bit of punditry at the Masters. Are you doing any this week?
No. I need a week off rest. Right. It's a long way to the West Coast. So sometimes my golf comes ahead of me talking.
We'll see you in La Hinch. What's the kind of plan the next while?
I've got one more in the States, and then it's back to, as I said, you're really looking at La Hinch, Scottish and Open, and three big weeks for me, three big weeks in the calendar, three links golf courses.
Yeah.
So, I because of my broken wrist during the winter, I really, every week I turn up, I just feel like, I'll use that term, I feel like I need more reps.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need, and missing cuts then, like missing the cut is the worst thing I can do because I need to be on the golf course, not on the practice ground. It's not like I need to hit more practice shots. I need to be out there. So being ready for those 3 weeks, three links golf courses, and getting a run on the course and feeling like, hey, yeah, I'm match ready, that would be quite important for me.
And in terms of your attitude, are you being pretty forgiving to yourself in the midst of trying to get back into it?
No. I wish I was. I was saying to somebody the other day, this game is so easy and so logical when you're looking in. And thus, when you're inside, you know, it's what's going through your own head. It's amazing how often you do things that you would tell somebody else not to do. So it's just not as easy to be. I'm pretty good when it comes to being accepting, but certainly it's the strongest area that I need to improve over the next couple of weeks, as always, is the mental side. I just need to be a little bit less about, you know, hitting good shots. Going back to what we talked earlier about the Tiger Wood attitude,
yeah.
A little bit more about get the job done and not really care how you're doing it.
Yeah. It is amazing that, like, you, in many respects, would have been one of the preeminent people in golf when I would have thought of people who are very good at golf psychology and understand golf psychology. And you've been at this now for a very long time. So you would kind of think at one point you would just get to the top of the hill and understand a lot of it and say, be accepting. And yet here you are in the midst of a comeback from a broken wrist and you almost have to catch yourself and realise, oh, geez, I'm being very hard on myself here. Why have I fallen into that trap?
Yeah, just because you understand something. It's do as I say, not as I do. It is tougher. You know, if that was the case, every player, as they got more experienced, would get better. But as we've essentially always see the great players, as they get more experienced, they hit a wall, and you know, things happen. Whether they're trying to get better and they open that can of worms, or they just feel like I would be very much when I tee it up now, I tee it up. Very much like what we were discussing earlier, I feel like it's a sprint,
yeah.
And I'm under pressure to have my A game straight away. And when Jordan Spieth was playing great there, you know, three, four years ago, there was a stat there that every time he made a bogey, he nearly birdied the next hole.
Yeah.
Well, if you're standing on over an 8 footer and you for par, and if you miss it, you know you're going to make birdie. It's not that hard to hold it.
Mm.
When I'm standing over the 8 footer, I don't feel I can give up a shot to the field. I feel like I need, and it's going back to Brooks. Brooks is in a position, he's staying patient. He feels like he can take a few hits this week and all he has to do is hang around and he'll be there.
Yeah.
When I'd be teeing it up, I don't feel like I can get anything to go wrong. And that's what happens when you're on the edge. It's a mental thing, but it comes from if you have good form and good results, it actually self-perfecting that you get a little bit better and better because when you miss a few cuts, you know, you're always on edge that you can't afford to take any punches at all.
Yeah, it's an endlessly frustrating and brilliant game. Listen, thanks so much for your time. It's very much appreciated. Enjoy Pebble Beach and so much as you can.
It's going to be frustrating.
Yeah.
For sure. Thanks very much.
All right, thanks, Padraig. Padraig Harrington there.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.